I wonder if we'd been there in the days after the resurrection, what we would have been thinking or feeling. The passage we read describes one of these resurrection encounters that happen in the 40 days between Easter and Ascension. These days in which the disciples came to terms with the death and resurrection of Jesus. In the Gospels and at the start of the book of Acts, we read about a number of different encounters which are presented to be convincing proofs that Jesus was alive. Whilst all the Gospels account for these days after the resurrection, each gives a slightly different perspective. Luke's Gospel is written in a way to make sense to people who didn't know too much about the backstory, written to those who may not have known much about the Jewish scriptures. Luke also writes as a physician. In his gospel and in the book of Acts, he attempts to dig out the facts, to find eyewitnesses, to delve into the physicality of what happened, and from that, present proofs as evidence. He seems to write in an attempt to convince, to prove that these things, however strange and unlikely, are the best possible explanation to fit with the facts. The proofs that Luke gives include the lack of a body in the tomb, the sightings of Jesus by different individuals and groups, Jesus walking and talking and eating with them, Jesus explaining the scriptures to open their minds as to what had happened, him showing them his scars, the physical signs of his death. Now, these writings certainly cannot give undeniable proof of the resurrection. They also seem to give very little explanation of how the resurrection occurred or what happened at that point. But these events do seem to have dramatically changed this group of disciples. Looking for reasonable proof of a resurrection, asking questions, seeking understandings, well, that's a good thing. Especially in religious settings, questioning alongside belief is so important. We don't want to be taken in by fanciful lies. We don't want to be taken in by some kind of Derren Brown mass religious hypnosis. Equally, we don't want to be taken in by some of the abuses that have been exposed within Christianity around manipulation. These rational and reasonable proofs found in the text certainly have convinced people over the centuries that Christianity is credible, reliable, even if mysterious. But I want to suggest today that these texts aren't primarily about giving proof. There's something deeper going on. These appearances don't just attempt to give a rational explanation of the resurrection, because the texts are primarily about a community struggling and working through the trauma that they've experienced. When we read about the disciples trying to work out what is happening, this isn't a group of people in a confirmation class or on an alpha course. They're not discussing Christianity and whether the resurrection is reliable. They're a group of people who've just witnessed extreme violence, grief, and betrayal. We read in the accounts how the threat of ongoing violence had left them feeling threatened, anxious, and frightened. They needed time to recover, time to regain emotional and mental stability. We know that people respond to traumatic events in different ways. Sometimes there are no outward visible signs, and yet inside serious emotional reactions are taking place. Shock and denial is normal, a normal way of protecting oneself from the impact of an event. And after the initial shock, responses can include dramatic mood changes, anxiety, nervousness, anger, flashbacks, withdrawal from normal activities. It would be normal for the disciples to be experiencing these things, and the gospel accounts do hint at this at points. Now, perhaps this shouldn't be treated as a normal or usual bereavement, not a normal trauma. And we shouldn't underestimate how much Jesus' presence with them brought healing. But equally, we read in the Gospels that they struggled to understand and believe. The appearances do not seem clear. They don't immediately recognize him. And even when they do realize it's him, we read that some worshipped and some doubted. When we recall the events of Holy Week, we know what is going to happen in the story. We understand the death and the torture of Jesus from an Easter Sunday perspective. But for the disciples, there wasn't any instant overnight assurance. The appearances don't seem to be conclusive on Easter Sunday. They weren't conclusive the next day or the day after. But over the next few weeks and months, in their mysterious encounters with Christ, they moved from being a traumatized community to becoming the proclaiming and witnessing church. So how did they get there? When Jesus appears to them, he does a few things. Firstly, he's present. He shows them his scars. The text suggests that he doesn't shrink back from the physical trauma of his death, but instead offers signs of this to them. They can touch and remember, seeing both the wounds and the healing that has already begun. For those in trauma, reliving and remembering in a contained and safe set space enables the start of the healing process, where memories are opened and reordered and put to rest. Jesus says to them, "See, I'm here. Touch me, touch my scars. It happened. It was real." Secondly, he enters into a process of explanation. He goes through the events and relates these to things that he had said earlier in his life and to the scriptures which pointed to his death and the resurrection of the Messiah. Those in trauma can go through a repeating cycle of processing, trying to work through what happened, why it happened. Could we have stopped it? Could we have done something different? What if? As Jesus processes with them and explains these questions, they're given time to process, given space to bring questions, given space to process and understand. Finally, and perhaps most importantly, we read that Jesus eats with them. In our reading this morning, the eating is given almost as a sign of proof that his body is real. But in most of the encounters after the resurrection, Jesus eats with them. He invites them to sit down and eat together. And it seems that there's something tangibly miraculous about sharing these meals. Perhaps their minds are drawn back to the Last Supper and to those words, "This is my body which is given for you. Do this in remembrance of me." And I wonder if when they shared the breakfast of cooked fish and bread by the water, whether they reminisced about the 5 loaves and 2 fish and the boy and all the leftovers. To eat together is to say that life is possible again. You see, in doing these things, in being with his friends like this, Jesus didn't just show them that he wasn't a ghost. This wasn't just proof that he was alive. It was proof that they could keep living. That they could and they would return to the table, remembering with joy and sadness that life came from death and that death could never hold that back, that death never had the final word, that whatever came, those who remained would keep eating, keep committing to sharing this life, living this way, because Jesus would always be with them. There is so much in life that distracts and distorts, that pulls us away from God. In these resurrection appearances, we're reminded of God's promise that there is no darkness, no place, no grave that God will not find us in and love us back to life. Now, it cannot explain away the horror of tragedy or the pain of grief. It cannot easily answer for the injustice. But that God persists and braves the horror of bodies broken and left undone. That God meets us in our trauma and asks us to sit and eat with him. This is the work of God. And Jesus calls to us too. Wherever we find ourselves, Christ is there, inviting us to his table, simply asking us to sit and to eat and to remember. Amen.